Well, it's a Panthers pre-game podcast here on Panthers Radio. Delighted to be joined by my friends and colleagues, Jono Bullard, Kenneth Feast, and Dan Green. Evening to you all.
Evening.
Evening.
So, it's great, isn't it? Four straight wins to start the season. Another two great performances by the Panthers. And as you'll hear in the pre-game press conference, particularly with Linton Grant, but also with Matt Alfaro, how they talk about how they know there's still work to do. And we talk about how good a situation that is, that you've won four games, but the team know they've got to get better. But yeah, four more points, win against Coventry Blaze, 3-2, and then the shootout win in Guildford. I'm going to spin the roulette. Who shall I start with? Kenneth Feast. Ken, you know, the boys, and you know, that's kind of going to be, I think, my first question. You know, they went to Manchester, they won with ease, they were always in command. But since then, they've had plenty of sort of ups and downs in games, but found ways to win. That's a really good trait to get early on, isn't it?
Yeah, there were many opportunities to lose those games, and we found a way to win, and I think that's the biggest positive. I think the manner as well in which we've held on, or we've won in a tight situation when maybe not everything's gone quite right for us near the end of the game, and you know, that's a positive to come out, you know, with the win. I think certainly the home games and probably the away ones as well. I think the support of the fan base has been a tremendous factor in that and getting us over the line. It's, you know, really is the extra man on the ice, and I think the team have felt that. Everyone's felt that the amazing support from the fans has been huge in terms of just giving us that final nudge for the dice to fall down on that, the coin to fall on the right side in favour of us. But some good positive early signs to build on, and like you say, the coaching staff, you know, plenty of areas where they feel, and the players feel as well collectively, that we can improve and we can be better. And so I think, you know, if you'd have said four wins out of four for, you know, three weeks ago when we were discussing this on the podcast, how I think we'd have all taken that.
Absolutely. Jono, to you next. I mean, we touched on this in previous podcasts, I think, in Saltbox. And that's just a reminder, if you want to join us at our pre-game show in Saltbox, it takes place every home game, gets underway 2 hours before face-off. And this week we get underway at 5 o'clock, and can give you a little exclusive if you're listening to this. This week's star guest will be none other than the legend that is Paul Adey. Paul Adey will be the star guest in Saltbox on Saturday. There's normally a guest, there's a podcast crew, just a variation of people who will be on the podcast, and a competition where you can win those prizes. That is Saltbox. Someone's making a lot of noise. I think it's you, Ken, in your kitchen moving around there.
Well, I'm just having a little bit of dark chocolate and just thinking about the fact that Dee from our bench will definitely be in Saltbox if she knows Mr. Adey's in there.
And Steph, if Steph's not on the podcast, which I don't think he is, he'll be there as well.
Yeah, Steph as well, yeah.
Both of them. Anyway, I'm losing my train of thought. But yeah, join us in Saltbox on Saturday. I'm not sure he's on now. I've done a little rota. We know in about 2 months, but in advance. But I'm not quite sure who's on this week. Anyway, we'll figure that out. It's on an Excel spreadsheet somewhere.
I can tell you.
Oh, who's on this week? Come on, Green. So you've actually looked at this spreadsheet?
No, I know where it is on my phone.
I think, to be fair, Steph was the only diva because he's the one that asked for selection change.
Yeah, he wanted the day off already. Yeah.
Big time, so Steph.
This week is Sam, Jono, Ken, Paul Adey.
Oh, what a trip. Oh, you boys will be buzzing to be there. Oh, Steph will be mad.
I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, I enjoy. I'm not here. Another wedding at the weekend, eh? Can't believe it. Anyway, look, my question to you, Jono. I haven't forgotten. My question is, it's quite kind of two in one here. We went on last week's podcast and we talked about how the standard of all teams had risen, and we talked about the crispness of passing and how good the Panthers looked. They were really good in the first period. And I think many would have been forgiven for thinking this could be 4-5-6, you know, to the Panthers. They were that good in the first period. So kind of want you to talk about that. But credit Coventry, because they came back strong as well.
They did. I said it to Kevin Moore in his post-game interview that Coventry seemed to grow into the game. And I think they were very much second best in that first period and Panthers were very much on top. But then the roles completely reversed, especially second period, as the shots on goal completely reversed. So I think it was 14-7 to Panthers in the first period and then 14-7 to Coventry in the second. So it was a complete change around. And I was really impressed with Coventry. On paper, you look at their squad, there's a lot of inexperience. They have five first-year pros in that roster on Saturday. And the way that Panthers started, you're absolutely right. And I think even me and Dan discussed it in the period break that, you know, we would probably go on and win that quite handsomely. But, you know, fair play, Coventry came right back into it. And they really gave us a scare at the end of the game because, well, I think when they scored to make it 3-2, they still had 1 minute and 10 seconds where they could have equalised and they went close a couple of times. So, yeah, fair play to them. I thought they played really, really well. And obviously they carried that on Sunday because they got a great result against Sheffield.
Well, this was going to be my point. I mean, I don't think I saw one pundit, one Twitter person who decided to put their thoughts out there. I think bar none, everybody put Blaze 10th. Everybody I saw who dared to make a prediction socially, online, whatever, put Blaze 10th. And they've now won all in pre-season. Okay, albeit against low opposition, but you still got to beat them. They've beaten the Clan. They've given us a scare and they've come back hard against the Sheffield.
To be fair, though, if you look at, if you compare all the rosters and we can only compare them on paper before the season starts, theirs does look the weakest roster on paper. Now, obviously, the game's not played on paper, but if you're going to make a prediction, that's all you've got to go on.
Yeah, so I think it's a fair point. But I think it's a fair point. And I think Kevin Moore and the Blaze would have loved being written off. I have no clue. He could have used that as motivation. He might have, you know, if I was a coach, I might have, you know, grabbed these little Twitter and put, look at this. This is what people think is going to happen to us.
Well, the one thing we know about Kevin Moore is he's the sort of man, the sort of coach that players will skate through brick walls for. They'll go into battle for him. And I think that's definitely what the Blaze did over the weekend.
Dan, the only contribution you've had sorry, Ken, you go first.
No, I was going to say, just back to Jono's point around Kevin, I know you can see, I mean, you know, with what he's doing at the Blaze, you can see that his hands and his involvement are on everything through that club. He's involved in things in detail. I mean, saw the stuff for Moore's travel and, you know, I know people have said he's running yoga sessions with the team. He's involved in kind of the meal prep side of things. He's involved. He really, really is. He eating, sleeping, and living the Blaze like it's his family. And I think what the Blaze fan base will know, and what probably runs through Kevin. Kevin really, really cares. He's a guy who cares. And I think that, you know, as Jono said, he seems to have got, like, you know, really got them working as a team and playing, that using that bit of that underdog mentality, but just concentrating on playing as a team and working as a unit.
Mm, and it's a great point. And that's right. That's the type of character he is. And just the final comment on this is he got a lovely ovation on Saturday and absolutely rightly so. Greener, the only contribution you've made to this podcast so far is a gasp. Are you watching? I'm trying to work out Tottenham aren't playing. Man United, were you watching?
I was watching Man U. They almost scored in like the second minute of injury time, which would have been a disaster, obviously, but they didn't. So
anyway, so now we hear your voice. I kind of want to move up straight on to Guildford, really, because... And again, we mentioned this in the interviews in the press conference, and I bring this up with Linton Grant. The performance of Rok Stojanovic, not only was it massive for Rock to get a start in a difficult place like Guildford, he was brilliant in the game. He made some huge saves, made a big one in overtime, and then was only beaten once in those six penalty shots. It was huge for Rock and also huge for the coaching staff because, you know, they'll be like, we've got a guy here who's going to push Bernard as well. So that was a big, big moment on Sunday, don't you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, obviously he hasn't played that much hockey. You know, he hadn't signed for a team. I don't know how much he was, you know, prepping for the season, knowing that he didn't have a team. And he kind of comes into us a little bit late on, and it was great for him to obviously get a game and, you know, play so well, get the huge win. And exactly that, you know, you want to have that 1-2 punch. You know, obviously Ryan's looks like he's, you know, he's obviously started really, really well. I would imagine he'll get the majority of the starts, but no, you know, to be able to bring in a 1B goalie on the second night of a sort of back-to-back and then pick up the 2 points is huge. So I think, you know, having those two guys kind of battling it out is only good for the Panthers.
Ken, how good is Christoph Kontos at penalty shots?
Well, he's insane. Like, cool, calm, collected. It's been a while, hasn't it? It's been a while since... You kind of, we've watched somebody with that much confidence in a Panthers jersey taking a penalty shot, and it was a joy to see.
Jono, Logan Nielsen, you know, he had that streak last season where he couldn't stop scoring, and obviously he got a couple in pre-season and then buried that one. You know, how did you see that
goal? What a goal that was. Superb. And he, the way he gets away, the way he robs the puck and gets away is brilliant. But then to produce the finish he did on the backhand top shelf, fabulous finish. And that'll do his confidence the world of good. It's always good to get that sort of first one of the season. And compared to last season, he's got it so early as well. So, and we saw what happened when he scored his first goal last season. He just went on and couldn't stop until unfortunately he got injured. But yeah, great finish. I had a little bugbear that it didn't make the Elite League Goals of the Week, though, because I thought that was better than some that were chosen, but I'm not choosing them. So
yes, I saw you querying that on one of our group chats, and I thought I'm pretty sure there'll be a goal in there from the Panthers, and I did ponder whether it was Logan's. Greener, like, you know, in previous years, the Panthers have probably had lines where you've looked at players and you've sort of thought, well, you know, his role is lower down the lineup. But right now, there's players lower down that lineup. If you're going down the four that's put out on the game sheet and on the, you know, down on the roster, but there's guys, you know, deep down the lineup that could be knocking on the door going, hey, I want to play more. I want to go up the lines, you know, and it shows what we said, you know, even before we'd really seen these guys play, looking at their resumes, that this team's got depth and it looked like that on paper. And it's really beginning to show that in the early stages on the ice as well, isn't it?
Yeah, I think we are as deep as we've been for a long time. And I mean, and Jono would kind of say on the commentary, you know, especially the last couple of years where if it wasn't, you know, last year, if it wasn't Otto or Hugo, or the year before, if it wasn't this guy or that guy doing it on that night, then we might kind of struggle. But I mean, I think really this year, any of those four forward lines you throw out, you know, especially the top three lines, I would say, none of them are a second or third line. They're all first lines, really. And I think the same on D. I think, you know, obviously, a shame that Cooper's out at the moment. But, you know, except him, the other five guys, any two of them could be on the ice. And they're good in their own end. They're chipping in with points. I think we've just got, you know, 12 forwards and 5-6 D. That, yeah, exactly that. You could put any of them out in any situation. And it seems so far this year that, you know, one game, line one does it. The next game, it's a different couple of guys. The next game, it's a different couple of guys. Either goalie can play and they'll both perform. It's, you know, great depth. And I just think that keeps everyone on their toes. You know, the sort of top guys know that if, you know, Kels or Logan have a good couple of games, they're going to be pushing to move up the line. So, no. So far, it's been almost perfect. And I think, yeah, I think depth's been one of our big keys.
You mentioned Cooper Zek. I was in the dressing room today. He came into the dressing room for the first time today after, obviously, we sadly lost him from action with the lower body injury. But again, you can already see the bond that these guys have, because clearly a few of them had seen him already and had been around to see him and whatever. But some of them, I guess, you could just see him coming in, you know, just put smiles on everyone's faces. And, you know, they were like, you're going to come and sit in the room and talk to us and stuff. And this was ahead of training. And, you know, and it's amazing how early a lot of the guys get in, like Danny Stewart has certain times and Linton Grant for stuff. But it's amazing to see the amount of players that are in way ahead of those timings. And that's great to see. And that really just does just show their commitment. to the cause. Right, we'll touch on kind of the weekend, and then we've got a few strands that we want to go in, and might roll the roulette wheel again to see where we go, to which of the many topics that are quite interesting to talk about. But before we go there, Jono, Sheffield Steelers on Saturday. I'm not going to bore people with when the last time we beat them in a competitive game was. It's pointless, but wouldn't it just be beautiful?
I have got it in my notes.
I don't want to know. Chris Gadsby would tell us, wouldn't he? You know,
We don't want to know.
Don't, let's not talk
it's
about it.
Two years today.
I said I didn't want to know.
Sorry, but
wouldn't it be great just to put it to them and
end up this God, weekend? Wouldn't it just? Yeah, just.
You're gonna leave it there.
Win. Just win.
Please. Yeah, Ken. What would it mean to the team to? Because the guys are aware. I've had brief chats with some of the guys. You know, even the new guys on the team, and they're kind of aware that there is a bit of a streak. And I don't want to dwell on it too much, but you know, how much would it? I'm going to rephrase the question instead of kind of talking about the negative side. How much would it mean, do you think, to get a win early on against, you know, a great team like the Steelers, if Panthers can do that on Saturday?
It'd be great for confidence. I think it'd be great for confidence, and it'd be great. It'd be great to see. It's a Challenge Cup fixture, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
So I mean, what's good as well is that fixture is now relevant again, because the Intertoto Cup for a while wasn't relevant until the Steelers won it again, and then it became relevant again. So it's good that we're at a time when it's a relevant game. So that is good. it'd be great for confidence. It would be really, really good for confidence.
Greeno, Coventry on Sunday, what sort of barn was that? You know, I don't think it's got the intensity as a barn when you played there for the Panthers and the Steelers and whatever. But, you know, what sort of, you know, that you know, those fans behind the bench could get on top of you. It must have been a fun place to play.
Yeah, it's definitely a bit of a tricky place to go. Obviously, a little bit smaller ice. You know, smaller dressing room. It's obviously not as luxurious as the NIC. So, you know, but, you know, it's the same as a few rinks which they've already been to. But definitely there, it's one of those places. If you get behind early, you know, if Coventry get a couple early, that crowd, even though obviously it's not a massive arena, they're loud, they're right on top of you. It becomes a very difficult place. And I think for a long time, you know, I remember, like you said, when I played, even if we had a good team, like, we struggled in there. It's quite a sort of hostile atmosphere, say, a bit for smaller ice. And, you know, those teams get good at playing in their own rink. So, you know, especially coming off probably a very emotional, draining game on Saturday against Sheffield at home, it will be a tough place to go. But, you know, obviously, the way we're playing at the moment, you'd like to think we would go in there and get a result. But no, it's definitely going to be no pushover.
So in terms of any other business, really, there's a few topics I think people are keen to get off their chest. Ken, you want to talk about nets off moorings? Jono, you've got an interesting point to make on referees calling penalties. I wonder whether we should start with what noise does a panther make? I feel like that's quite topical. Ken, you got anything to say about that?
Well, what I would just like to say is that I've learned a lot about big cats in the last few days, their vocal cords, how they work, their lower jaw system, and what constitutes even a panther. Everything's been redressed. The panther is a leopard, apparently. A black panther's a leopard, not a panther. And panthers can't roar, but leopards can. And we've seen some video evidence shared that there are roars. I think it's a great debate, and
yeah,
that's it. Really, I'd say it's all academic, because I'm still going to play the roar. And,
yeah.
But yeah, it's great, from the fan base of a team that have got a crocodile as a mascot, it's even, you know, it's even better.
I'm just glad that we're still called the Panthers, you know, after a week of midnight phone calls about whether we should change our name and whatever. I'm just glad that we've come through it unscathed. High-level management, crisis talks.
Gone right to the very top.
Yeah, right to the very top. And, we came out unscathed. Well done, everyone. A great piece of social, by the way.
But brilliant banter as well. Like, yeah. You know, that's what I love about the league. I love about the rivalry, the banter between fans, you can have that sort of engagement with something that is just, you know, if you're outside looking in, you probably don't, but it's what makes hockey such a great sport.
Yeah, and fair play to the person that did it. I mean, you know, I suspect,
oh, brilliant. Yeah.
I suspect they knew what they were doing. And yeah, they hooked, you know, I've got no shame to admit it. It was me that replied on the account and they hooked us in and it was great. And it got everybody talking and, you know, there was a great piece of social content. And I learned a lot of things that I hadn't learned before. Jono, you just wanted to clear up a bit about the call when there was two, well, let's take the bit step by step. So it was a play where Panthers went on a 5-on-3 in the end for two separate incidents. I saw that and thought, right, well, one of the two incidents is probably going to potentially be a major. I wasn't quite sure which one because I was busy doing other things at the time. But you got a bit of clarification on what the officials can and can't do. The officials instigated that call on the stick on Jordan Kelso. Is that correct?
That's right. So it was the high sticking call on Alessio Luciani of the Coventry Blaze at 47:23 in the third period of the game on Saturday. And for those who were at the game or watching on the webcast, they'll have known that the referees went to review the play. Now, I was mistakenly under the impression that only major penalties could be reviewed. So both me and Dan discussed it on the commentary. And I said, are they possibly looking at spearing? Because from when we looked at the replays, that was sort of the conclusion that you drew if you was calling a major penalty. Now, it has to be called a major penalty on the ice for the referees to review it. However, what I had not, or I've forgotten from the initial meeting that we had before the season, is that they can also review double minor penalties for high sticking to check if there was any contact, to check if it's a 2-minute penalty or 2+2. So what would have happened is the referees would have called it a 2+2 initially, but they went to review it to check if their call was right or if it should just be a 2-minute. And so that's what they was reviewing it for. They was checking that it was a 2+2 or a 2. They gave it a 2 after the review. And many thanks to Luke Fisher from the Elite League who messaged me to clear all that up. So we have clarification on that now.
Poor revision, though. How did you do in your GCSEs, Eve?
I look at stuff, but I don't write it down. And that's
I don't remember things I did yesterday, so I don't know why I joke.
I'm getting old. That's my excuse.
On a serious point, Greener, don't you think it's good that the officials have this ability now that these sort of things are being brought in, so we're more likely to get to the right decision? Because look, you know, I'm a massive backer of our officials. You know, you only need to see that, like, you know, let's, for example, you know, you people in ice hockey in the UK want better officials and they say they've got to be better. They're not good enough. And they say, oh, maybe they should be professional. But Premier League officials in football are professionals and they get hammered every week. It to me, it's just a fact of life that officials in the NHL, you only got to look at the NHL, they get hammered in the NHL. It's just force of habit. It's instilled in sports supporters' DNA that if things don't go for their team, they don't criticise the officials. So, you know, I'm one to stick up for the officials. Of course officials make mistakes. Of course they have bad games. Of course they're going to make a howler of a call. You know, but these guys and girls go out week in, week out, and you know, I am going to defend them here and say, you know, they do the best with the tools that they have. None of them are full-time. And, you know, that's not something I think is going to change very quickly. That's a very different debate and not one we've probably got time to get into here. But my point really was, before I went off on a tangent and a bit of a soapbox there, Greener, was that, you know, it's good that they're getting these tools now to get those important decisions right, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's great. You know, me and Jono say it all the time on the commentary. We'd rather they took a minute, 2 minutes and get the right decision, because you know, you don't want a call being missed or a major being missed, or whether it's a goal, or, you know, whatever it is, and it costs someone the game, and that's the big talking point, you know, like the decision last week that you were just talking about. It took a couple of minutes, boom, you've got the right decision, move on. You know, I think everybody, you invest so much in hockey, and the game takes 2.5 hours anyway, you might as well take an extra 2 or 3 minutes and you get all the big decisions right. So speed of the game, the size of the players, it's such a difficult job. Like, everybody berates the refs and whatever, but I would hate to do it. And you want to give them as much help as possible. So if you've got the technology and it takes a few minutes to do it, get it right, then there's no complaining. And I think it's great.
Ken, do you want to join in on this one, or do you want to move on to the Nets on and off moorings debate?
I was just thinking as you were chatting, I was thinking about that point around, you know, the relationship in any sport that fans have with the referees at any level. So, and I thought, do you think, would there ever be a time where technology is sufficient that AI replaces a referee? And if it did, would the game be poorer as a result of that, is my thing. And I, so what do you think?
That's just fascinating, because there's so many strands to that. But, you know, just a tiny thing that popped into my head. We talk about the atmosphere at the arena. You know, when Panthers fans feel they're hard done by, that unbelievable support gets even better. And you know that from on the bench and everything. So, you know, I guess AI would maybe take that away. Computers can make mistakes, though.
You've got to have a human aspect to it. At the end of the day, it's humans refereeing other humans, and humans make mistakes. We're not perfect.
But Jono, I mean, you've really blown my mind with that point, Ken. Surely with the way technology is evolving, technically speaking, an ice hockey game one day could be officiated by a computer.
Well, it could certainly be commentated on by one. I mean, how long's Jono and Dan got left, really?
Good point, yeah.
have you heard the AI on YouTube? It sounds like, what is it, American Soccer Guy?
me as well. How long before you just go, AI just replaces the DJ and the announcer.
But I'd love to hear people's opinions. Like, you know, and somebody who's in the, you know, I mean, I'd never want to get rid of officials, but the way technology is, could it be run? It's a great question.
There's definitely bits they could do, like the offsides, the icings, the gold. All of that could be done, because that's black and white. But I think things like the penalties, that comes down to discretion, and I don't think a computer could decide, you know. But I think a lot of it could be almost maybe like the linesman's role, the kind of, yeah, the offsides, all that stuff could definitely be done. But I think there's too much other stuff that goes on. It'd be the same in football, like the offsides, the whatever. But I think the actual fouls and things have to be, you know.
I think you have to look at cricket, because cricket, I think, is the one that uses technology the most to make decisions. No balls in international cricket are now taken completely out of the umpire's hands. It's all done
by another umpire, by another human.
Yes, yeah. But it's off the television footage.
Off the television, yeah.
So the technology is there. Runouts for years they've been using television technology for that. And then, of course, you've got the old snickometer or whatever it's called, and Hawkeye for the LBW. So that has sort of revolutionised cricket. Can't see it in hockey. I just think it's too fascinating.
But what if it could assist?
Definitely. I think anything that helps.
If something's offside, it just gives them a buzz on, like a
red light or something. Or I agree. I think anything that assists, and anything, and that would be a positive assist if it was calling offside. Yeah, I agree with that.
You see what's happened with VAR in football, and there's a view that it's gone over a curve, I think, that's meant that by being so super right about things and down to the nth degree, it's actually damaged the game. And that's, there's always, like, you know.
But in hockey, you've got, it's a line. there is an actual line drawn on the ice that you have to go over. So I think that makes it a lot easier to manage that with technology. With football, there's no the lines are drawn on. So
yeah, but they're drawn on by a computer, aren't they? They're doing
they are. But that's often been shown to be wrong.
Yeah,
I'll go back to Man U Coventry in the FA Cup semi-final.
If every single decision, let's say AI could do it all, and it was all completely infallible, what would we have to talk about on a podcast?
Well, exactly. But you might not have meant to do this, Ken, but when you made this point. But, you know, we're sitting here now, and we're talking about the technology that's with us now. But in 50 years' time, you know, how old will we be in? We'll be in our 80s, 90s, and 100s. So, you know, we won't be talking very quickly. But, you know, the technology then, you've made a fascinating point. And who knows? Anyway, Elon Musk.
I remember the days when we had humans doing this job.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, Nets off the moorings is an interesting one because in Guildford there was two goals scored, one by either team. They were both given. One took longer than the other, but it appears to me from my limited knowledge of the rules, you're going to give me a bit of a rundown, Ken, I think, but it appears to me that they were right. The Coventry one, which I've seen, there might be a bit more debate. Now I'm going to surmise in what I'm aware of and what we discussed beforehand. And you put it in the rules, it's about whether there's a scoring chance, you know, while the play is in motion, whether there's a scoring chance. Now, both those goals in Guildford, that was spot on. I think that was spot on. But because the rules are a bit different, you know, Jono can nod here because I'm going to come to you, Ken. But in the old days, if a net was up the moorings, the goal was cancelled no matter what. There was never really.
There was a game we played against Sheffield, actually, where we went 5-0 up and the net was way off the moorings and John Craig had scored. The puck went right through the middle of the crease where the goal would have been and the goal was given, even though the net was way off and it had been off for a while, but the goal still stood.
But as a rule, you felt in the old days, anytime a net was off its moorings, it didn't matter whether the goalie kicked it off or whatever. It was normally not a goal. But Ken, I think you've got some in front of you, or you've recited well and you've done your research and you've done your revision quite well. The rules are slightly different now.
I have to give credit to Steph Litchfield because he's provided me with a copy of the IIHF rulebook for the 24-25 season. And I asked him to kind of, because I didn't know exactly where to look, but rule 63.7, as pointed out by Steph, awarded goal. In the event the goalpost is displaced, either deliberately or accidentally by a defending player, prior to the puck crossing the goal line between the normal position of the goalpost, the referee may award a goal. In order to award a goal in this situation, the goalpost must have been displaced by the actions of a defending player. The attacking player must have an imminent scoring opportunity, that's in inverted commas, prior to the goalpost being displaced, and it must be determined that the puck would have entered the goal between the normal position of the goalpost. If the goalpost is deliberately displaced by a goalkeeper during the course of a breakaway, a goal will be awarded to the non-offending team. When the goalpost has been displaced deliberately by the defending team, when their goalkeeper has been removed for an extra attacker, thereby preventing an impending goal by the attacking team, the referee shall award a goal to the attacking team. So the goal frame is only considered to be displaced if either or both goal pegs are no longer in their respective holes in the ice, or the net has come completely off one or both pegs prior to or as the puck enters the goal. So that's what the IIHF rulebook says. I think these should be handed out or made available to purchase at games so that people can go away and look. Because often, and back to your point, Chris, you don't realise, because I've seen the debate around this and what should and shouldn't be, there was very little actual in the debate around it that referred back to the rule book. And the amount of knowledge and the amount of stuff that the referees have to process just to be even out there refereeing that game around all these situations and scenarios that they're tested on, it's literally a book full of, you know, it's there.
But it's insane, isn't it? Because again, we don't have long left, but they get that rule book, and then they go in the CHL, and stupid things happen. Well, you say stupid. I think some people like the change in rules, but you know, if a shorthanded goal gets scored, the teams go back to full strength. You know, it's Jono, you're nodding there. I mean, you've got to say, you know, for the officials, I think the officials get it right way more than fans give them credit for. And look, I'm not having a go at fans, because fans might be judging from what they think are the rules, what the rules might have been, and they've not been aware of changed.
They should also, as Steph pointed out to me, the IIHF rulebook should be read in conjunction with the Elite League casebook for the 24-25 season, which has the casebook rules for,
and has slightly different versions of some sort.
And they're both available to download as well. Anybody can go and download them. So the rulebook is available to download from the IIHF website. The EIHL casebook is available to download from the Elite League website. If you go to the EIHL at the top of the website, click on it, and then you've got the EIHL, and then the casebook is there linked, and you can download it.
If they send,
so I would advise anybody to do it.
We all know what Green is doing tonight.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
If they send a stamped addressed envelope to John O'Bullard's house, you'll print one off and send it to people, won't you?
I would if I had a printer. But
maybe anyone who gets a ticket has to tick a box. To they've got to read the rules, you know.
I think it'd be really good for just anybody's knowledge of the game. I was the world's worst in the stands for shouting at referees for getting it wrong, and then one day I realized you could download the rule book. I downloaded it, and I used to have it on my phone. So if there was something I wasn't sure of, I could refer to it, like in a period break. And it helped my knowledge of the game no end, because I went from being the referee's worst critic to being one of their biggest supporters. Because you know what? They do know what they're talking about. They have to know so much. They have to know that rule book inside out.
Rina, do you have the rules on your phone? He's not listening. He's cooking. He's cooking again. That noise in the background.
That is... Are you talking to me?
Yeah, we're talking to you, mate. You realise you're on a podcast. You're not on Come Dine With Me.
Sorry, I don't have the rules on my phone. Absolutely not.
No, okay.
But he's played the game, so he knows the rules inside out.
Yeah.
I just stand next to Jono, so he knows everything.
I
won't get that far, mate.
serious question. How many times did you knock a net off deliberately when you were a player?
Do you know what? Not really. Like, the only time you ever think about doing it is when you're short-handed because you want to get your guys off the ice and you want to get a whistle so it just breaks the play. You'd see a lot of goalies, especially when you were 5-on-3, if they can knock the net off once, it just gives you a chance to get a change. But I think the problem is some guys get like, they lose their concentration because they're thinking about doing it, and it kind of puts them off. And obviously you can get a penalty for doing it. I don't think back in the day you would get a penalty as likely, but you still could. But I'm sure there are goalies that try and do it all the time to get...
Greener, as a goalie that never used to do it and didn't, where was the easiest place to do it? Where was the easiest rink to knock a goal off its moorings?
It would probably be, honestly, probably somewhere like Coventry.
Brilliant. We're going to have to wrap this up, but I've loved that, boys. I'm really glad that the AOB was so fun, and we got a lot through it there. So don't forget, Panthers Steelers on Saturday. Limited tickets available. Get them quickly and come join us in Saltbox, the podcast crew involving Jono Bullard and Ken Feast and Mr. Paul Adey, who will also be the main guest interview. But for now, we'll speak to you soon.